This is Christian Questions.
The button. Mark Twain once said, he had discovered a great law of human action without knowing it. Namely, in order to make a man or a boy covet a thing, it is only necessary to make the thing difficult to attain. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Christian Questions, talk radio with a purpose with Jonathan and Rick. This isn't your typical Christian commentary. We love talking with our audience. We promise to never talk at you like so many talk shows do today. This is a conversation about biblical topics as we look at them from a different perspective.
And Rick, that perspective is based on godly principles, family values, honest dialogue, all in a politically free zone.
And Jonathan, the best part is this. We talk and you listen, and then you talk and we listen.
And if you want to contact us, you can contact us on our web at christianquestions.net.
So on behalf of myself, I'm Rick, and Jonathan, my co-host.
Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. We're glad that you've chosen to spend some time with us here this morning. And Jonathan, we have in the studio with us this morning a third co-host.
A friend.
A friend. She's come back to spend the morning with us. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, thank you.
That's good. You know what? We want to get her mic up a little higher, I think. So, Jonathan.
Hey, Rick, you're sounding a little quieter than normal here.
Yeah, well, so if my voice goes in the middle, it's up to you guys. That's all I can tell you. Isn't that exciting?
Oh, boy.
What is our topic for this morning?
All right, Rick, our question is, what do you want? And our theme text is found in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 21. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, and you shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, or his male servant, or his female servant, his ox, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor.
So we're going to be talking about, well, what do you want? Humans are emotional beings. As this is the case, we want things. We don't just have an instinctual magnetism towards certain things. We truly desire them. The 10th commandment says, thou shalt not covet. Now, does this mean that the seemingly inborn trait to desire is wrong? Against God's law? If it's wrong, then why is it built into each of us? Folks, stay with us this morning as we try and truly understand human coveting and the role it plays or doesn't play in our Christian lives.
Well, Rick, we have two questions for consideration this morning, and the first question is, what does it mean to covet?
And secondly, is coveting bad? Are you bad if you covet? Bad, Jonathan.
You really sound sheepish there.
Yes, bad, Jonathan. All right, let's get started here. Folks, the subject matter is about wanting things. And we thought that we would do this subject now because it's near Christmas time. And, you know, one of the big questions that people ask is, hey, what do you want for Christmas? And so wanting things and coveting could have something to do with one another, and we figured we'd put it on the table for some discussion here this morning. So if you have a thought on wanting things, on coveting, is it good, is it bad, is it indifferent, let us know. It's 866-985-4255, toll-free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8, and that means we're on right now.
Well, Rick, a couple definitions for the word covet is to wish for earnestly or to covet an award.
Okay, or to desire something.
Yes, and to desire what belongs to another, to feel an inordinate desire for what belongs to another.
All right, so to wish for earnest. Vic, have you ever wished for something earnestly?
Oh, yes.
Aha. Was it a good thing or a bad thing?
A good thing.
So coveting's not bad then?
Well, because I didn't want somebody else's something, I just wanted it for me.
Okay. All right, we're gonna develop this because this could be a trick question, actually, if you think about it. And in the Old Testament, there's a couple of words used for coveting. One means to delight in, mm-hmm. and the other means
desire, be desirous, or long for.
Okay, so pretty simple. Let's take a look at the first use of any of those words in the Bible in terms of a desire or coveting. And it's actually not translated covet in this particular verse. Vic, why don't you read Genesis 2:9?
And out of the ground made the Lord God to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, the tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
Now, I didn't hear the word covet in there.
No, but she really emphasized pleasant, didn't
okay.
she?
Okay. So, out of the ground, God made to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight. Okay?
So, that word pleasant is the same word for covet.
And that's the word that means to delight in. So, let's understand this. God built the Garden of Eden with trees that were very attractive.
Yeah.
That human beings would look at and really like looking at.
Delight in.
So
how about all God's creation? We delight in.
Right.
Well, we should anyway.
Nature.
So here you have the beginning of that with this pleasant to the sight. And that would be a good thing because God created that.
Sure.
So God creates something that we can look at and delight in looking at. All right. Now, let's look at Deuteronomy 5:21 because in this verse it talks about the Ten Commandments. This is not the Exodus version of the Ten Commandments, but the Deuteronomy version. And it actually uses two different words for covet in this particular verse.
And this is chapter 5, verse 21. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, and you shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, or his male servant, or his female servant, his ox, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor.
All right, now in the Exodus version, it says, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, and you shall not covet your neighbor's house. In the Deuteronomy version, it uses two different words.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wonder why that is. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. And that word for covet is the same word used in Genesis 2:9. It says that the trees were pleasant to the sight.
Interesting.
And then it says you shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, or
well, one
his servants.
One was a good thing and one was a bad thing.
Well, what do you mean?
It's good to see that pleasant tree, but it's not good to covet your neighbor's wife.
So God builds desire into us.
Yes.
And oftentimes that desire is built into us through sight.
Mm-hmm.
We see something, and like Vic, when you got up this morning, I know it was really early.
And dark, I didn't see much.
Yeah, but when you picked out the clothing you're wearing,
yes.
What was your thought process?
I
just got to get something out of the closet? What?
Actually, I have to pick it out the night before because I would be like that in the morning. But no, I wanted it to look nice.
All right. And that is just part of where we are. That's part of who we are. That's part of what we're made of is we like things that look nice.
If you just tuned in, this is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick and Vic, and we're talking about what do you want? And if you have a thought, give us a call at 866-985-4255. That's toll-free, 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. That means we're on right now. And our website is christianquestions.net.
So we're talking about desire. We're talking about coveting because the commandment says, thou shalt not covet. And if you stop it right there and then you say, well, but God built desire into each of us, it's like God's contradicting himself.
So there's got to be a good and a bad desire.
Ha. And I think that's where we begin.
You know, I never looked at covet as being possibly good.
Well, I know.
It's so strange to think that.
Well, the fact that there's two different Hebrew words, I guess, then it's our English that has made the word covet have a negative connotation.
Well, maybe and maybe not.
Okay.
We'll develop this a little bit further. Let's take a moment here and go to a soundbite from a movie that I think that folks that you're all probably familiar with. Everybody here, I'm sure, has seen Miracle on 34th Street.
Yes.
Yes.
And this is going to the original version, the 1947 version. And I just, because I thought it was amusing, the scene is Kris Kringle, you know, the guy who says he's Santa Claus,
mm-hmm.
is sitting in the Macy's store, and he's got this little boy, his name is Peter, coming to sit on his lap and, you know, talk about what he wants for Christmas.
All right. Let's
just listen into this.
And a Merry Christmas to you. Now then, what's your name, little
Peter.
Boy? And what do you want for Christmas, Peter?
I want a fire engine just like the big ones, a little smaller. It's got real hoses and squirts real water. I want the house only in the backyard, I promise.
Mm-hmm. Now, Peter, I see you're a very good boy, so you'll get your fire engine.
You see, I told you to get me one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, dear. Well, look, you wait right over there. Mommy wants to thank Santa, too.
No, mommy wants to give Santa a piece of her mind.
Uh-oh. He's in trouble.
But, you know, when you hear that, the little boy sitting there and he wants a fire engine, then, you know, this goes back to 1947, because, see, now it would be, I want a Wii.
Right.
Or something like that.
I don't even know what they'd want now. It's so far beyond me.
But, you know, he knows exactly what he wants, and he rattles it off. And you couldn't understand him because he's talking so fast.
Oh, exactly.
I listened to it four or five times. He says, I want a fire engine just like the big ones, only smaller. It's got real hoses that squirt real water. I won't do it in the house, only in the backyard, I promise.
Yeah. That's innocence, isn't it?
Well, and that you can tell that he's been bargaining with his mother.
And his mother keeps saying no.
No, because you're going to squirt the water in the right. house. And so he's already got it nailed down as to what the conditions are to get what he wants.
Uh-huh.
So he goes to Santa, and he lays out the conditions ahead of time so he's able to get what he wants, you know, hopefully anyway. Now, that's coveting, right? He wants
yes,
something.
It's yes. a desire, yes. yes.
Now, is that wrong?
No.
I don't think
so. As long
so.
As he really doesn't squirt it in the house.
See? Spoken like a true mother. Keep that thing outside.
So it can be good.
So, and when you look at a little kid wanting something like that, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. So we need to understand where coveting can end up being something that could be damaging, and where having desires for things is actually good. That's what we're trying to begin to understand here. And folks, if you have a thought, it's 866-985-4255, toll free 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8, and that means we're on right now.
And our website is christianquestions.net.
Also, check us out on Facebook and on our website, Jonathan. We now have the CQ blog up and running.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You guys are getting really technical.
Yeah, well, no, actually, the other guys are getting technical. I just talk about it, okay? I like it when it works that way. So, we're looking at coveting, we're looking at desiring, and seeing how that can work for us. And, you know, one of the questions is, why were those two different words used in that Deuteronomy scripture? You had, thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife, and you shall not desire your neighbor's house or his field, and so forth and so on. I think one of the reasons for the two different words is it's putting coveting your neighbor's wife in a slightly different category than desiring your neighbor's sheep or oxen or land.
Right.
Because you can look at, and we'll develop this as the program goes on, you can look at your neighbor's wife and say, wow, she's beautiful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, is that wrong?
No.
But you don't want to delight in her, which is the definition for that word.
Aha. So when you delight in her,
it can go too far.
It can easily go too far. And now you are beginning to say, oh, I wish, if only. And now you're in a whole different area, and that's where coveting takes on a very bad light.
So don't get passion involved
exactly.
with that desire.
Okay. So let's take a look at Proverbs 13, 3-5, for some guidelines for focusing our desires.
The one who guards his mouth preserves his life. The one who opens wide his lips comes to ruin.
Okay. So the first point then. Somebody who guards their mouth preserves his life. What does that mean? You keep your hand over your mouth?
That might work.
Wouldn't go well with a rodeo lawyer.
Doesn't come across very well that way.
No, it doesn't. But the point is, when you watch what you say, when you're careful with your words, you're preserving your life. You're putting your life in a better position.
Well, Rick, here's how it continues. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is made fat.
All right. And so the word for craves is the same word as one of those words for covet.
Mm-hmm.
So the soul of the sluggard. Oh, thou sluggard. There's a word we don't use too often these
that's
days.
For sure.
But you know what? You listen to that word and you automatically think that's not a good word.
No.
Just, I mean, sluggard. Come on. When you don't want to be a sluggard. With the soul of the sluggard craves, wants things, and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is made fat. What's the difference? One just wants it.
They both have a desire.
Right. But the diligent does
something.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other guy is just the sluggard just wanting it. And then Vic, finish up with verse 5.
A righteous man hates falsehood, but a wicked man acts disgustingly and shamefully.
All right. So hating falsehood versus acting disgustingly and shamefully. These are some of the guidelines for making sure that our desires are put in the right place and put in order in our lives. Folks, we're talking about coveting. Is it good? Is it bad? When should we covet? When should we avoid such a thing?
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick and Vicki. When we get back, Rick is going to explain how the Ten Commandments are like a sandwich. It better be kosher.
Yeah.
You're listening to Christian Questions.
Welcome back to Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick and Vicki, and our subject this morning is, what do you want? To be a part of our program, call toll-free 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. That means we're on right now, and our website is christianquestions.net.
All right, and Jonathan, before the break, you said something about a sandwich?
Yeah, you're going to explain to us how the Ten Commandments are like a sandwich.
All right, and we are actually talking about coveting, which is the Tenth Commandment.
Mm-hmm.
So coveting has to do with food. Is that what? No, there's actually more to it than that.
Okay.
But let's get started here. Let's look at the structure of the Ten Commandments from Exodus 20. We're going to just rattle through an abbreviated version of each of the commandments because a lot of them have an explanation. And so if you just take the abbreviated version, you're not going to get the whole meaning. But just so we can get the Ten Commandments on the table, and this is from Exodus 20. Jonathan, why don't you and Vicki go through those?
All right. The first is, thou shalt have no other gods before me.
And the second, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image.
The third, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain.
The fourth, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy.
The fifth, honor thy father and thy mother.
The sixth, thou shalt not kill.
The seventh, thou shalt not commit adultery.
The eighth, thou shalt not steal.
The ninth, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor.
And the final, thou shalt not covet.
All right, so you have the abbreviated version of the commandments. Now, if you look at them, they're divided into two basic sections, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first four commandments are what?
They guide our relationship with God.
All right, so the first four are all about us relating to God. The second six are what?
Those are our guiding relationship with our human family.
Okay, so you've got two basic categories. Now, the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me, that's a commandment that's kind of an internal commandment because you don't know if somebody has other gods inside of their heart.
That's right. It's fulfilled in our heart and mind.
Right. So it's sort of an inside commandment.
Gotcha.
And then the next commandments are not to make graven images, not to take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, remembering the Sabbath day. So the next commandments are external expressions of that first.
That we can see in other people.
Okay. Okay. So now when you look at the second set of commandments, the second six commandments, the second six, six through four through ten, rather, again, you have five of those numbers, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, are all external things. Mm-hmm. You don't do this. Don't kill. Don't covet. Don't kill. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't bear false witness. Honor your father and your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all external things. Those are things that you can tell that you're doing.
Right.
Coveting is one of those internal things.
Oh, that's the desire of the heart or the mind.
Right.
Okay.
Because
okay.
You can't necessarily tell if somebody is coveting something
that
they shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
So the sandwich thing comes into play.
Okay.
Because you have the first commandment and the tenth are internal things.
Okay.
Matters of the heart, so to speak. Sandwiching actions.
The external.
Right.
Hmm.
So there you have the Ten Commandments sandwich that you were talking about.
And yes, it's kosher, I guess. Huh?
I think it would be kosher. So and I think that's important because we're talking about coveting. And again, having desire is not necessarily a bad thing, but we need to make sure we have our desire toward the right kinds of things.
If you just tuned in, this is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick and Vicki. And our question is, what do you want? And we're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. That means we're on right now. If you have a thought, give us a call at 866-985-4255. That's toll-free, 866-985-4ALL. And our website, christianquestions.net.
And Jonathan, why don't we go to the phones?
All right. We have Tim from Tennessee. Good morning, Tim, and welcome to Christian Questions.
Hello. I wanted to comment briefly about the custom of children sitting in Santa's lap and giving their list of what they want.
Okay.
You know, that actually goes back to the worship of hearth spirits and passing children through the fire to Moloch. That's why Santa comes down the chimney. And, you know, when the Jews did that, they went into captivity as punishment for it. And I just wonder, you know, where we're going to end up for that. Thanks.
Okay. That was some things that I had never heard of before in terms
That's
of
interesting.
The, yeah, in terms of the origination of that. So I think Tim's point was that be careful of things like that because you don't want to get yourself involved in something where it doesn't have a good origin.
It really is neat if you see a child at Christmas, instead of saying, what do you want? It throws them off a little bit if you say, what's your favorite gift? What are you most excited about giving this year for Christmas? And you get some really cool answers that they're, oh, I can't wait to give Dad his new tie or, you know, whatever. But it is a twist that we can be a little part of.
Well, and I think that's ought to be part of our focus on these things. And, Tim, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for bringing it to our attention.
I got to look into that.
Me too.
Those are things I'd never heard of before. But the idea of refocusing attention on not so much getting but on giving mm-hmm. and getting building excitement
over what you're giving.
Over what you're giving. And when even a very, very small child, when you – I mean, every small child loves to get presents.
Sure.
But if you focus them on giving something – it's a big deal for them.
Oh, yeah.
And they're very, very excited. And even when they're very small, they'll tell you what it is before you get to open it because it's just an exciting thing.
They're so excited.
Yeah. So, folks, if you have a thought, we're talking about coveting, we're talking about getting, we're talking about giving and putting it all in perspective. It's 866-985-4255. Toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8, and that means we're on right now.
And our website is ChristianQuestions.net.
And also, don't forget to check out CQ Rewind.
That's right.
It's on ChristianQuestions.net. That's where you can get it. And it's a document, a PDF file that you can sign up for to get emailed to
and
you.
And it's free, Rick.
It's free.
And it's great for Bible studies.
And it summarizes the previous week's program and puts it all in order with all the scriptures. You really want to check that out. So, Jonathan, back to our point here. So the Ten Commandments are like a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
You have internal desire in the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Internal desire in the last commandment, thou shalt not covet. And the eight in between are the things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
The point is the coveting commandment is different than most because it's a heart thing. It's what we want. And we have to be careful with what we want. And again, let's talk about little kids, and this will be another, sorry, Tim, but this will be another Santa Claus example, because I think that it just helps us to get how excited a child can be about wanting something that's very, very important to them. And this is from another movie that, folks, many of you have heard of this, and some of us don't like this movie so much.
Yeah.
Some of us do. Movie's A Christmas Story, and to set the context here, it was done. The movie was done in 1983. Takes place in Hammond, Indiana, in the 1940s. 9-year-old Ralphie Parker wants only one thing for Christmas: an official Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle with a compass in the stock and this thing which tells time. And that's what he wants. He's laying out hints for his father and his mother all over the place. He writes his Christmas paper about it. And, you know, he keeps getting from his mother whenever she brings it up.
You're going to shoot your eye out.
Yeah, that's right. See, that's what the mother says. So now Ralphie gets the opportunity to go see Santa Claus. And here's what happens.
What do you want for Christmas, little boy?
My mind had gone blank. Frantically, I tried to remember what it was I wanted. I was blowing it.
Come on, kid. How about a nice football?
Football? Football? What's a football? Without conscious will, my voice squeaked out.
Football. Okay, get him out of here.
A football? Oh, no. Okay. What was I doing? Wake up, stupid. Wake up. No.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Poor Ralphie.
Aww.
But see, here's the thing. He was so excited about it. He knows exactly what he wants, and the moment came and he froze. Because he was so into his thing here, but it was such a big deal that it overcame him. He was overcome with emotion. Now, was Ralphie bad to want his what is it, Red Ryder carbine action 200 shot range model air rifle?
Well, no, it didn't belong to anyone else.
and that's the point. Okay, now if Ralphie said I want Jonathan's, I got to keep reading this.
Oh, that's
official Red Ryder carbine action 200 shot range model air rifle. That would have been a different story.
You're right.
But he just that was the thing that really really motivated him. And you know, we all have those things from our child. I remember when I was probably 10, 11, 12 years old, I was fascinated. Now, and I'm dating myself here, but oh well. This is the time when we were sending men to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated with the astronauts and the moon and all that. And there was this toy, this Major Matt Mason. Now, I don't think anybody will ever remember this, but this guy, he had a moon station and a space crawler, and he had the things where you pull the string and he flies across the room, and it was the most awesome space toy you could ever imagine. And I begged and I begged and I bargained so I could get not only Major Matt Mason, but I wanted the space station and the space crawler and the...
Did you get it?
Yeah, I did, man. Made my life.
We can tell.
For a period of years.
So you're a space cadet.
Folks, if you have a thought, give us a call, will you? 866-985-4255. Toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8, and that means we're on right now. We're talking about what do you want? Is coveting, is it good? Is it bad? Can it be good? Can it be bad? What do you think? Let us know.
Well, Rick, what about the original coveter, Satan?
And let's talk about that for a second. Let's look at Isaiah 14, 12 to 14, because Satan wanted something, and the kind of coveting we're talking about here is desiring those things which should not rightfully belong to us. Vic, why don't you take that scripture.
How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High.
So what's Lucifer saying here?
He wants what's not his, but he's going to take it. He's going to go beyond God.
Not only does he want what's not his, but he wants what should not be his.
Good point.
And see, that's the key to coveting when you're looking at it from a negative standpoint. Wanting something that should not be ours.
So the key then is to figure out in your head who gets to decide what should be yours and what shouldn't.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Because you've got to have that guideline in place. Now, let's look at Eve, the first human coveter.
Genesis 3, verse 6, and when the woman saw the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat.
All right, now wait. Because here you have this tree that, remember, God, it said in the first segment, we were talking about God created the trees to be desirous.
Mm-hmm.
He made them so that they would be incredibly attractive to the human family.
That's right. But this one did not belong to her.
But it was in the garden.
But he told her no.
All the other trees she could enjoy, but this one she couldn't.
Why?
A test.
Well, and that's exactly what it was. It was a test to say, okay, of all of the trees of the garden you can eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, don't.
Obedience is really the lesson.
So that was put off limits. Even though it was something to be desired,
mm-hmm.
It was put off limits. And she crossed the line of off limits. And that's what made the coveting, the desire part, evil. Because she crossed the line to something that should not rightfully have been hers. Now, at some point down the road, that would have been hers.
I see.
God would have opened up the partaking of that particular tree to be for them at some point, but not yet. And so because it was not yet, she had crossed the line, and that was not a good thing. So we have Eve coveting. We had Lucifer, Satan, coveting. And now, Vicki, we also have angels.
Yes, we do. In Genesis 6, 1 through 2. Now it came to pass when men began to multiply in the face of the earth and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose.
Was that a good thing or a bad thing?
Bad. Very, very bad.
Women did not belong to angels.
Right. There was no rightful connection
right
between the angelic race and the human race. And so when the angels desired them,
they followed through with that desire.
And that's actually a good point, because it's one thing to have it, and it's another
right
thing to follow through with it.
Yeah.
That's what made it evil.
That's right.
So not only are we talking about coveting not being healthy, we're talking about coveting in the wrong context being evil.
So evil that the Lord had to wipe them out with the flood.
So there. So we keep going. It's like we're watching some
ping pong match.
Yeah, it's going back and forth, back and forth here. Because on one side,
it could be good.
Yeah, coveting, having desires is good. It's a
natural
human thing,
right?
Of course it is. On the other side, though, when we covet those things which should not rightfully belong to us, that's where we get into trouble, and that's where the coveting is not only unhealthy, but it can be very evil.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan, here with Rick and Vicki, and our question is, what do you want? Coming up, the Brady Bunch. Do you remember what Cindy asked for, the youngest, on a Christmas episode?
You're listening to Christian Questions.
Welcome back to Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan, here with Rick and Vicki, and our question this morning is, what do you want? To be a part of our program, call toll-free, 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. That means we're on right now, and our website is christianquestions.net.
And we are talking about coveting, and we're looking at it from two different standpoints. It can be a good thing, or it can be a bad thing, and even an evil thing. So how do you figure out where you are, and if you're walking on solid ground, or you're taking a walk on quicksand?
Well, if you just tuned in, why don't we review what we've already covered? The first point is, to covet is to have a desire for something.
All right. It's simple as that, to have a desire for something. What else?
God built desire into the human frame. Therefore, it's not inherently bad.
All right. God built us to have desires.
So desires are kind of like goals.
Goals?
You can have a goal to want a red rifle gun there.
A red rifle gun thingy there with the compass.
You know, with the compass. Yeah. The okay. Red Ryder carbine okay. Action 200 shot range model air rifle.
Like Ralphie from A Christmas Story.
Right,
okay.
Right.
So, yeah, okay. Desires can be like goals. All
Another right. point is, the Old Testament law forbade coveting those things we have no right to.
And that's the key. If you just read the part of the commandment that says, thou shalt not covet, that doesn't tell the whole story.
You're right.
It clarifies it by saying, you shall not covet, you shall not desire your neighbor's wife, or your neighbor's animals, or his
manservants, maidservants,
or his land, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. It's theirs. You have no right to it, so get over yourself. That's what that commandment really is saying. Next point.
And spiritual beings, as well as human beings, have displayed coveting, both good and bad.
So the concept of desire is something that is not just human, but it is in the spirit realm as well.
So this is an eternal lesson for all beings.
Actually, that's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put
Ooh,
it.
Ooh, I'm going to listen more now. Eternal, really?
Well, it does make sense, because you've got the spirit realm showing desires. Again, not always good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that God has built in to all of his creation. Very, very interesting. And folks, if you have a thought, it's 866-985-4255, toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. That means we're on right now.
And our website is christianquestions.net, and check us out on Facebook.
And the CQ blog, which is also on christianquestions.net. You want to participate in that, we'd love to have you. Let's go back to Santa Claus one more time, okay? Just one more time. And you had mentioned the Brady Bunch.
Yes, I did.
This is an episode where Cindy Brady is sitting on Santa's lap. Sorry, Tim from Tennessee again. Her mom is suffering from laryngitis and will not be able to sing in the Christmas program. So let's listen to Cindy Brady's request from Santa Claus.
Well, my sakes. What's your name?
Cindy Brady.
My, but you are a pretty little girl. What toy would you like to have Santa bring you?
Oh, I don't want any toys.
No toys? Well, you must want something for Christmas.
I do. I want my mommy to get her voice back.
Your mommy's voice back?
Mommy's got laryngitis. Real bad.
Well, that is a shame.
And she has to sing at church on Christmas.
Well, Cindy, I don't think I can...
Oh, please, Santa. It's all I want for Christmas.
Well, you certainly are a sweet, unselfish little girl. I'm sure your mommy will get her voice back.
Oh, thank you, Santa.
Oh, thank you, Santa.
That warms my heart.
And you're almost... to the laryngitis stage
I know.
Yourself.
You can tell, can't you? Yeah, I'm hanging on by a little thread here this morning. But
are you going to sing at the Christmas program?
No, I'm not. And everybody's glad that I'm not. But the point there is, you have the first two clips we played from the other two movies were children, you know, who desperately want something, and all kids get into that. But here's an example of a child that wants something. For her mom.
A selfless desire. That's so neat.
And, you know, Vicki, you were talking about that before, about how if you can begin to talk to children about the excitement of giving, it takes some of the focus off the excitement of getting.
Right, because I think naturally that's where they are. They're very receiving. But if you can teach them to get outside themselves, then maybe someday they'll do it.
Well, Rick, why don't we go to the phones, and we have Julius from Connecticut. Good morning, Julius, and welcome to Christian Questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, Merry Christmas.
To you too,
Merry
sir.
Christmas.
And if I may, wish it also to our friends in Tennessee and Indiana.
Okay.
Happy holidays to them also. What do you want? Well, number one, my bullet point here is world peace.
Okay.
Number one. Number two, I have a... Chinese proverb that says, wrong desire is the enemy of happiness. Number two. Number three, Psalms 37:4. Delight thyself in God, and he will give you the desires of your heart. That was Psalms 37:4. And finally, number four, the classic example, it's also known secularly, but within the biblical context, is that when Solomon asked God for wisdom, and God says, because you did not ask for money or anything else, he says, not only will I give you wisdom, I will also give you wealth. What a great example. Thank you, beautiful program. God bless.
Thank you, Julius. Appreciate your call.
Bye-bye.
All right, so he wants world peace. Wrong desire is the enemy of happiness. Psalm 37:4. Trust in the Lord, and God will grant you the desires of your hearts.
Delight yourself in the Lord.
There you go. So, Julius is putting desire in its proper context, where it belongs, and essentially putting up the guidelines for make sure you don't step outside of these things, because then we can get into all kinds of trouble with our desiring.
If you just tuned in, this is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan, here with Rick and Vicki, and our question is, what do you want? And if you have a thought, give us a call at 866-985-4255. That's toll-free, 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8, and that means we're on right now. And our website, christianquestions.net.
Okay, and let's go on now to another example. I think this is a very interesting example from the scriptures of a desire and what happens to this desire. This is, excuse me, this is when David, before David is king, and he's essentially on the run from King Saul. And he's got some very, very loyal followers that follow him around, so to speak. So that's the context of this. This is 2 Samuel chapter 23, verses 14 through 17.
David was then in the stronghold, while the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. David had a craving and said, "Oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate."
Okay, so they're hiding.
Yes.
They're hiding out from the Philistines, and David has this craving for water from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate.
Well, Rick, that word craving is the same word for covet.
Okay, so he's desiring this water from this particular well. Now, they can't get to the well because that's where the Philistines are.
Well, let's continue in the story. So the three men, the mighty men, broke through the camp of the Philistines and drew water from the well of Bethlehem, which was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David.
So three of his truest, most loyal warriors heard what David said, and they made it their business to go get the water for him.
Wow.
They went into the enemy's camp, and they went there to do one thing, to get a cup of water. Yeah. And go ahead, finish it up there.
Nevertheless, he would not drink it, but poured it out to the Lord. And he said, "Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of the men who went in jeopardy of their lives?" Therefore, he would not drink it.
So they bring back this water. They risk their lives. And what does he do?
Pours it out. Before the Lord, though. I like that part. So he didn't just dump it.
All right. So what's his reaction then?
He was sad that or upset that they risked their lives for something that he was just wanting.
And I think that's a good way to put it. He really wanted to drink that water.
Well, Rick, was David's desire wrong?
Okay, now, because you've got a very unusual set of circumstances. And I don't think it was a wrong desire. Oh, I would love if somebody could get me water from the well of Bethlehem. There's nothing wrong with that.
Were his loyal soldiers wrong for going to get it?
Well, now I think that's a hard question, because David wasn't asking anybody to go risk their lives.
He wasn't.
He didn't want anybody to risk their lives.
No, but he did say, "Oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate."
That was that desire
that he verbalized.
That's true. But
then
when he gets the water, what does he do? He won't drink it.
Right.
Was this reaction wrong?
See, and again, I think his reaction was appropriate, because he was sort of musing on his desire, just sort of speaking out loud what was happening, what he was desiring in his heart. And these men heard it and decided to try and fulfill it, but they risked their lives needlessly. And so his reaction is, "I cannot in good conscience drink this water, because these men needlessly risked their lives."
Well, is the lesson, be careful what you say?
And I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it. Our desires can get us into all kinds of trouble. And here, David didn't mean for his men to risk their lives. We know that, because otherwise he would have just drank the water and said, "Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Right.
good job. How about a steak?"
But see, when I'm at home and I say, "Oh, that someone would vacuum the living room for me," I really mean it.
Okay, well, that's good.
You know?
"Oh, that someone would vacuum the living room for me, as I am tired from a hard day."
But I do think in looking at this that this isn't – we have only a piece of the conversation. I am sure that David had a longer conversation with these three men and didn't just act like he was ungrateful.
Well, and I think that what he did actually showed tremendous gratefulness,
yeah,
because he said he would not drink it out but poured it out to the Lord. So he made that water a sacrifice,
right,
to God. And he said, "Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. I value their lives far too much just to take it casually, that they gave me some water here."
What a great character he had.
Yeah.
Well, Rick, you share that coveting can be good. Well, what are good things to covet?
All right, let's take a look at that. And folks, if you have a thought, it's 866-985-4255. Toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. That means we're on right now. We'd love to hear from you. We're talking about, what do you want?
Our website, christianquestions.net.
And on that website, you want to check out Facebook, check out the CQ blog, and CQ Rewind, which is a transcript of portions of the program with all of the scriptures. It's available to you free of charge. Let's look at what should we covet. Let's look at Psalm 19, verses 7 through 10, and we'll take it piece by piece.
The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul.
Okay, so the law of the Lord, that sounds like something to desire.
The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple.
So the laws of God, the testimony of God.
The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart.
The statutes, slightly different from the law, but these are things that all that put our lives in order, so to speak.
The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes.
So you've got the law, the testimony, the statutes, and the commandment of the Lord, and all of these things bring goodness to our lives.
The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever.
And that fear, it's not being, you know, running afraid and hiding.
Reverence.
It's reverence. The reverence of the Lord is clean. It endures forever.
The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether.
And so we've got the law, the testimony, the statutes, the commandment, the fear of God or the respect of God, and the judgments of the Lord. And to wrap this up, verse 10, Vicki?
More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb.
So more to be desired, more to be coveted. Are they the judgments of the Lord and the respect of the Lord and the commandments and the statutes and the testimony and the law of the Lord? Are they then gold? Folks, we're talking about coveting and desires and how they should work in our lives and what we should be careful of. We still haven't discussed just how coveting works. Is it the same process for good and bad coveting? Stay with us. We'll be back for the second hour after the news and all of that and look into the mechanics of coveting. For Jonathan and Rick and Vicki, it's Christian Questions. We'll be back soon, but until then, what do you want? Think about it.
Is Christian Questions.
Winston Churchill once said, "We do not covet anything from any nation except their respect." Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Christian Questions Talk Radio with your breakfast with Jonathan and Rick and Vicki this morning. This isn't your typical Christian commentary. We love talking with our audience, and we promise to never talk at you like so many talk shows do today. This is a conversation about biblical topics as we look at them from a different perspective. And Jonathan, what is it we're talking about this morning?
Well, Rick, our question is, what do you want? And our theme text is found
on... I don't know. What do you want?
Oh, I know what I want, but I don't know what you want. Our theme text is found in Deuteronomy 5, verse 21. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, and you shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, or his male servant or female servant, his ox or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor.
So in the first hour, we were talking about coveting and putting it in the perspective of sometimes it can be a good thing, but sometimes it can be a very, very bad thing.
And we don't want to desire what we don't have a right to, Rick.
And I think that's the important thing. There were 4 points from coveting from the first hour that we just want to touch on just by way of review. Let's go through those quickly.
To covet is to have a desire for something.
God built desire into the human frame, therefore it's not inherently bad.
And that's an important point.
The Old Testament law forbade coveting those things we have no right to.
And that's what you talked about before.
Yes.
And spiritual beings as well as human beings have displayed coveting, both good and bad.
So coveting then is a two-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
It can be something, when we desire something positive, and we go and we work towards it and we accomplish it, that's a great thing.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So and that desire brings us higher.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, when we desire something that should not be ours.
At the expense of someone else.
Exactly. That becomes evil. And so that's what we're looking at as we look at this conversation on coveting and things that we want.
So in the Deuteronomy 5 scripture, does your neighbor mean just the person living next door?
Now, there's a good question. Does your neighbor mean just the guy living next door?
And what or happens? Maybe across the street.
Okay.
Won't you be my neighbor?
Well, and I think the answer to that is when you look at the way Deuteronomy is written, you know that it's not just a person in close proximity to you physically. It is those people within the nation around you. That's what Deuteronomy was talking about.
So it's anybody you're coming in contact with?
Yes.
Okay.
And you shouldn't want what is theirs Now, you may, and we'll get to this question later, but, well, can you want something that's like theirs? I mean, if they've got these really...
You mean the Joneses?
Well, you know, we'll have to get into that. But, Jonathan, what are some of the things our listeners need to know about?
Well, if you have more to say after the program, you can write us at Christian Questions, P.O. Box 1837, New London, Connecticut, 06320. And you can check us out on our website. Again, that's christianquestions.net. And we have many archive programs you can listen to. And if you have any questions or comments, that's the best way to get in touch. ChristianQuestions.net, and now available at our website, CQ Rewind. Have you heard a program recently that you really liked, or for that matter, didn't like? Would you like to actually see the scriptures and the reasonings that link those scriptures together? Well, now you can. It's called CQ Rewind. Now, CQ Rewind has two parts. The first is a summary version. That includes excerpts and transcripts and scriptural citations, and that's available free of charge as a download from the website. But the second is the full edition, and that's available by email sign-up only. And that includes comprehensive excerpts, transcripts, and fully quoted scriptures, all presented in a reader-friendly format full of graphics and illustrations. Now, that's also free of charge, so you just have to sign up. So check them both out, ChristianQuestions.net, CQ Rewind. You heard the program. Now see it as well.
Now, see, there's a classic example of coveting. You can say, oh, I really want that CQ Rewind thing.
And that's not a bad thing.
No, you can just send in your email address.
And the thing is that you're not taking it away from somebody else to have it yourself. We have enough copies to go around for everyone. It's a PDF file. So that's a good coveting. That's a good desire. You want to be able to understand what we're talking about a little more fully. You do that. So keep that in mind, folks, at ChristianQuestions.net. Also, if you would like to speak with us but not on the phone, you can contact us at Rick, R-E-C-K, at ChristianQuestions.net, Rick at ChristianQuestions.net. So, folks, we're talking about coveting, things that we want. At the end of the first hour, we said we're going to begin to discuss how does coveting work.
Yes.
There's actually stages to coveting. Let's get into those stages. It's a repeated pattern that you're going to see coming up over and over and over again. Vicki, what's the first stage?
The observation stage is when you see something that's attractive.
All right. So you see it and you say, ooh.
I like that.
Exactly.
The next is the thought stage, holding and personalizing the image of that which is attractive.
So you saw something which is attractive. You see, you saw it and it stays in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so and then you start to think about it a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. Now, in terms of negative coveting, you're looking at it and maybe you're taking things a little too far at this point.
Mm.
Okay. What's the next stage?
The rationalization stage.
You know, whenever you see that word.
Rationalization.
Red flag.
Yeah, that's right. It's generally not a good thing.
And that's when you convince yourself that you deserve what you covet.
All right. So you've been thinking about it, and now you're saying, well, I really should have it. But you know what? I want it.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I don't care if it belongs to Jonathan. I want it.
I'm going to take it.
And that's really what it comes down to is I really want to have it for my own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we begin to get into trouble. All coveting is not bad, but we have to be careful with it. That's the key. We're going to go to, for the second hour, we're going to tell a few stories here. One story is from a movie called The Count of Monte Cristo. It was done in 2002. It takes place in the early 1800s France. Edmond Dantès is a simple, honest young man whose best friend is the rich and arrogant Fernand Mondego, who is jealous of Edmond Dantès. He's jealous of him and wants whatever he has. And it's kind of interesting because the guy with all of the money is the one who's jealous of the one who has nothing. And the one is educated, the other is not. But Edmond is a very simple man. He's got great integrity, and he doesn't get that. He doesn't see all of that. And the movie is about their relationship and how it breaks down. And at the beginning, the clip we're going to play you is Fernand, who is the rich guy, the arrogant guy, is talking with Edmond's fiancée, and they all grew up together. And let's listen to their interchange.
I know what you want, Fernand.
You do?
Remember when we were little kids and Edmond got that whistle for his birthday and you got a pony? Well, you were so mad that Edmond was happier with his whistle than you were with your pony. And I'm not going to be your next whistle.
All right, it's that simple. So Edmond is engaged to this woman, and Fernán Mondego wants her, and she's just basically saying, look, you know, it's been the same since we were little kids. You got a pony and he gets a whistle, and you're jealous of his whistle, you know.
What's up with that?
Well, and it's a good example though, because sometimes we get this inordinate desire towards something that should not be ours, and I think that puts the example in front of us very clearly.
It also twists it, because usually you would think that you would covet something of greater value than what you have, and this is kind of that flag to look inside of ourselves and say, ooh, maybe I'm not just coveting a bigger car. Maybe I am coveting a simpler lifestyle that someone else has, but it's still coveting.
Right, and it's still, when you're still trying to take something from somebody else, that's where the problem arises.
Jealousy is a big part of this
and example. And we're going to see that grow in this story as we go through it. Folks, if you have a thought, it's 866-985-4255, toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. It means we're on right now. Let us know what you think. And our website is christianquestions.net. Let's develop now another story alongside of the Count of Monte Cristo. And this will be a story from the scriptures again. This is one that I'm sure you folks are somewhat familiar with.
This is in 2 Samuel 11, 1 through 4. Then it happened in the spring, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel. And they destroyed the sons of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David stayed in Jerusalem.
All right, so when kings go out to battle.
Wasn't David king?
Yes, he was.
Why was he in Jerusalem?
Yeah, right. So that's the first question. Okay, so why didn't he go out to battle when he was like he was supposed to?
In continuing, now when evening came, David arose from his bed and walked around on the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing. And the woman was very beautiful in appearance.
Okay, there's the observation. Remember we said that there were three stages. There's actually four stages of coveting, and we only mentioned three so far. That's the observation stage. He sees this woman, and she's gorgeous. All right? Plain and simple. She's gorgeous. He sees her. Let's go on to verse 3.
So David sent and inquired about the woman, and one said, is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?
All right, so he wants to find out who this gorgeous woman is. Now, David is king, right? And when you're king, sometimes you think that, you know, pretty much you've got everything and everything is yours, and if it's not yours, it ought to be yours. And David is falling into that category of thinking. So now he's thinking about it, and he finds out that she is the wife of one of his mighty men, Uriah. And then what does verse 4 say, the beginning of verse 4?
David sent messengers and took her.
He rationalized. He said, well, I want her anyway.
I'm king.
And it sounds so flippant almost. You know, it's just this simple thing. Well, you know, yeah, he's off to battle. What's the difference? So he rationalizes and he sends for her.
Mm-hmm.
So here is coveting, those three stages, the observation stage, he sees her, the thought stage, who is she, and then he rationalizes and he takes her. This is not a good situation.
No, it's not.
And it's only going to lead to death and destruction. That's all it's going to lead to. Well, we're going to get to Nathan's reproof of David shortly, but let's go to the phones first.
All right, we have Peter from Connecticut. Good morning, Peter, and welcome to Christian Questions.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. You hit something there with the pony and the whistle, and I think the coveting was just the happiness, the pure happiness with a simple gift.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who was just not going to be satisfied until they controlled or had everything.
Right.
It almost seems that way. I know you're not political.
Right.
And the show is strictly, you know, not political. But when you say coveting and the wrong way to approach it, it just, I couldn't resist thinking of politics. you know, the way our lives are juggled and the way those who have influence can't seem to get enough. And it almost tends to go back down to what your basic premise is on this program today. So I didn't want to, put the politics into that, but the coveting thing is something where I think, like you said earlier, if you go about it the right way, if I see a car that just, oh, man, well, now, there's nothing that says I can't work toward getting something like that, as long as it doesn't step on anybody else's toes,
exactly,
or cake or like that. So, very good topic today.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your input.
Bye-bye.
So he was good. He's talked about politics on the edge. It didn't bring it in, so we're glad for that. Thank you, Peter, for that. And he also mentioned that point about the desire for power and control. And in as we go back to the Count of Monte Cristo, the movie, we're going to see that desire becomes overwhelming and it gets out of order. Let's just very quickly here look at Nathan's reproof of David, 2 Samuel 12, 1 through 4.
Then the Lord sent Nathan to David, and he came to him and said, "There were two men in one city, the one rich and the other poor. The rich man had a great many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb, which he brought and nourished. And it grew up together with him and his children. It would eat of his bread and drink of his cup and lie in his bosom, and was like a daughter to him. Now a traveler came to the rich man, and he was unwilling to take from his own flock or his own herd to prepare for the wayfarer who had come to him. Rather, he took the poor man's ewe lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him."
Okay, so Nathan is a prophet. David sins with Bathsheba, and he spins this terrible, terrible web, and he needs a prophet of God to tell him a story so he can understand how bad his sin was. That's where coveting got David.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick, and we have Vicki with us. And our question is, what do you want? Coming up in the next segment, the last step of coveting.
You're listening to Christian Questions.
Welcome back to Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick and Vicki, and our question this morning is, what do you want? To be a part of our program, call toll-free, 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-FOR-ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. That means we're on right now. And our website is christianquestions.net. Check us out on Facebook and check out our blog.
All at the website, christianquestions.net. And if you would like to contact us but are sheepish about talking on the phone, it's okay. You can certainly email us at Rick, R-A-C-K, at christianquestions.net. We'd love to hear from you. Any kind of feedback is welcome. Vic, you were talking about coveting, no surprise, during the break.
I do stay on topic on occasion.
Anyway, you had some points you wanted to just bring out quickly here.
I just thought it was interesting that when you get in the line of, or in the habit, I guess, of coveting, that it's always something more. You want the next thing, and then you're, you know, like Jonathan was saying, it appeases you for a little while, and then you're looking for something else because it's so empty, and you're not you think you're going to find happiness in things, and it doesn't happen that way.
So you keep looking for the next thing and
right.
The next thing.
So happiness is temporary, but then it fizzles away really
exactly.
Fast.
Yeah, and it's really not happiness when you analyze it. It's maybe exhilaration, but it's not happiness.
Good point.
And you're right. You're going and just continuing to open up things and not get anywhere. And that's what's happening here in our story from the Count of Monte Cristo. We're going to see that develop in the story of King David. He covets another man's wife. He takes her. He ends up having the man murdered, essentially, so he can have her legally. And basically, he's just kind of going on with his life, and that's why Nathan the prophet had to come to him. God sends Nathan to tell David how wrong he is.
He needed a wake-up call.
And so Nathan gets to David by telling him a story as though he's asking for the king's judgment on a matter, and about a man who has lots of flocks, who has a visitor come in, and instead of taking one of his own sheep for the meal, he takes the one little ewe lamb of this poor individual and uses that for the meal. And so that's the story, and he's going to seek David's reaction on that. So we've got David's actual physical life set up where he coveted illegally and ends up getting into trouble. We've got Nathan. And now we have the story of Edmond Dantes, this simple, honest young man whose best friend, Fernand Mondego, wants his girlfriend. And so what he does, the next soundbite we're going to play here, is Fernand's desire for Edmond's fiancée is such that he can't get away from it. So he sets Edmond up to take a fall for a crime that he didn't commit. And so let's listen to this.
Why? In God's name, why? Because you're the son of a clerk. And I'm not supposed to want to be you. In here.
In here.
So what happens is Edmond is set up, and he goes running to his friend to say, "They're after me. I didn't do it. I didn't do it." And Fernand turns him in.
Whoa.
And that's why he says, you know, Edmond says, "In God's name, why? Why are you doing this to me?" And Fernand's response is, "Because you're the son of a clerk, and I'm not supposed to want to be you."
And that's all from the movie Monte Cristo that I'm going to have to go home and watch.
The Count of Monte Cristo.
The Count of Monte Cristo. Okay. It's a great story. It's a great story, but you can hear the passion, and Edmond's reaction is he can't understand it.
He's innocent.
Why are you doing this to me? We're friends, and it's because his friend, quote unquote, can't get over the fact that he just wants to be him. the guy who has everything.
Coveting somebody else's personality.
And everything that he ever had. Folks, we're talking about desire and coveting and how to put it in the right perspective. Let us know what you think. 866-985-4255. Toll free 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8, and that means we're on right now.
And our website is christianquestions.net. Well, Rick, on to the last phase of covetousness.
Okay, so we talked about the first three phases were the observation stage, the thought stage, so you observe something that you want, then you let it get into your thoughts and stay there.
Then the rationalization stage.
And that's the key, okay? Now you rationalize and start to think, well, I should have this. I want it, so I should have this. And now the last stage is the action stage, turning the inward sin of covetousness into an outward sin of action. And that's where it all truly does fall apart. So let's go back to King David's example of sin, of great sin, a great covetousness, which led to nothing but disaster.
And that's found in 2 Samuel 11, 4 through 11.
And he had just called for Bathsheba, right?
Yes.
He lay with her, and when she had purified herself from her uncleanness, she returned to her house.
So he takes her, and he has sex with her. Great. Great job there, King.
Next one. Someone else's wife.
That's right. But he's king, and he wanted her.
And he rationalized it.
And he did something about it.
And now look what happens. The woman conceived, and she sent and told David and said, "I am pregnant." Then David sent to Joab, saying, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." So Joab sent Uriah to David.
So Uriah is her husband. So he calls Uriah back from the battlefronts. Okay? And so David now has done evil. And so what is he going to do? He's going to do more evil to cover up the evil he already did.
How can he cover up what's just happened?
Well, let's see what he's trying to do here.
When Uriah came to him, David asked concerning the welfare of Joab and the people and the state of the war. Then David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." And Uriah went out of the king's house, and a present from the king was sent out after him. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord and did not go down to his house. Now when they told David, saying, Uriah did not go down to his house.
So David's scheme
is not working.
Right. Because his scheme is, okay, I'm going to call Uriah back from the battlefront. I'm going to ask him how things are going and say, look, you've been fighting hard. Go home to your wife. He says, okay, he'll go home to his wife. They'll get together. She's pregnant and I'm off the hook. But he doesn't go home. He sleeps at the door. And so David now has got to figure out, well, what's going on here?
David said to Uriah, "Have you not come from a journey? Why did you not go down to your house?" Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah are staying in temporary shelters, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are camping in the open field. Shall I then go to my house to eat and drink and to lie with my wife? But your life and the life of your soul, I will not do this thing."
And I'll tell you, if that's not a major slap in the face.
Integrity on
right.
Big time.
Because, I mean, Uriah is saying, look, my army is out in battle. The Ark of the Covenant is out in battle. All of these things are out in battle. You expect me, while they are out there, to go to the comforts of my own home? By my life and yours, I will not do this thing.
Wow.
While David...
What a good man.
Right. And David had done that all along. Remember, he wasn't leading his army into battle.
He was supposed to be. It was the spring when all the kings were at war.
Yeah, all the kings except David, that is. So David... He has this coveting. He had the observation. He had the thought stage. He rationalized. He took Bathsheba. He got her pregnant. And now he's in the action. He has to cover it up. Uriah's not cooperating with him.
If you just tuned in, this is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick and Vicki. And our question is, what do you want? And if you have a thought, give us a call at 866-985-4255. That's toll-free, 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. That means we're on right now, and our website is christianquestions.net. And check out CQ Rewind on the net.
Also, check us out on Facebook and the blog. You can find those all on christianquestions.net. Now, we're not going to finish reading the story. There's a lot of details here. But what does David do to Uriah eventually?
Sends him out to the front line to be killed.
And has the other men withdraw from the battle so he will...
So he has no chance.
Yeah, he doesn't.
So he figures, okay, people didn't necessarily know that he didn't come home and sleep with his wife. So if I just get the guy killed, then I can get off the hook. So he murders the man, essentially, not by his own hand, but he instructs his murder to happen, and then he can take Bathsheba to be his wife, and then everything will be okay. Now think about that. Everything will be okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say no.
Think how evil, how much evil went into that thought process.
And it was a scheme that had to develop over and over and get bigger and bigger, all because the covetousness was desiring something that was not rightfully his. And that's where we have to draw the line. So now let's jump over to, we looked at the Count of Monte Cristo, where one friend turns in another friend, we looked at King David, not only sinning with Bathsheba, but sinning in terms of the life of Uriah. And now let's go back to Nathan, the prophet of God, who sent to David to let him know just how bad things are. So remember, he talked about the story about the man who had all the sheep and taking the one sheep from the guy who had only one to feed to his visitor.
Rather, he took the poor man's ewe lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. Then David's anger burned greatly against the man, and he said to Nathan, "As the Lord lives, surely the man who has done this deserves to die. He must make restitution for the lamb fourfold, because he did this thing and had no compassion."
So David is, as a king would do, is pronouncing judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So
a rightful judgment.
Right. And this is the great part of this, is that Nathan is coming to the king for his judgment, and David is giving out a judgment, and he's angry, saying, how could this man do that? He has to make restitution four times over now. He should never, ever have done such a hideously evil thing. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. But David is angry.
Yes, to make restitution fourfold is
right.
What David says.
So not just replace the lamb, but give him four instead of just one.
Right.
Nathan then said to David, "You are the man."
Let's just pause for a second there. David now is suddenly faced with the fact of the evil in his own heart that his coveting brought to him. And he is faced unequivocally, because when Nathan says that, there's no question David knows he did wrong. He just tried to cover it and cover it and cover it, and now he can't hide anymore. The word is out, so to speak. So
that's what's so frightening with rationalization, is you really start to believe it, and then it's not until later that you're like, oh my goodness, what did I do?
And so again, coveting isn't always bad.
No.
Okay, if we're coveting those things which can be ours rightfully, mm-hmm. that's okay. But when we begin to covet those things which we have no rights to, That is where we need to draw the line. And folks, if you have a thought, it's 866-985-4255. Toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. That means we're on right now. We're talking about coveting desires and how to put them in place and focus on the good ones and banish the bad ones. So you have Nathan telling King David, you are that man. The judgment you just pronounced is against you.
And what was his judgment? His life should be taken from him, and he should restore it fourfold.
Yeah. Surely the man who has done this deserves to die. That's what he said. And it was about sheep.
Yeah, not wives, right.
Yeah. Right. This is just about sheep. So let's hear what Nathan goes on to say further.
Thus says the Lord God of Israel, it is I who anointed you king over Israel, and it is I who delivered you from the hand of Saul. I also gave you your master's house and your master's wives into your care, and I gave you the house of Israel and Judah. And if that had been too little, I would have added to you many more things like these.
So now the door has been opened and the flood comes in, and Nathan is not pulling any punches. And he's saying, this is what God is saying to you. I made you the king. I delivered you from Saul. I gave you everything you could have wanted. And if you wanted more, I would have given you more. And this is what you do?
And Nathan says, why have you despised the word of the Lord by doing evil in his sight? You have struck down Uriah the Hittite with a sword. You have taken his wife to be your wife and have killed him with the sword and the sons of Ammon.
So you, David, are the man. Thou art the man. You are the one who has brought evil to your house by your own desires, by your own thoughts, by your own rationalization, and then by your own actions. So when we covet, folks, we have to be very clear that what we are desiring is something that is rightful to desire. Because when we desire those things which are not, all we end up with is trouble. Not just trouble, but heartache, but an evil, and death. Death ends up coming from these things.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick and Vicki, and our question is, what do you want? And when we get back, we're going to be talking about the best path for us to take when confronted with our own covetousness.
You're listening to Christian Questions.
Welcome back to Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick and Vicki, and our question is, what do you want? To be a part of our program, call toll-free 866-985-4255. That's toll-free 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8, and that means we're on right now. And our website is christianquestions.net.
And if you'd like to contact us and not use the phone, you can email us at Rick, R-I-C-K, at christianquestions.net. We'd love to hear from you there as well. We are talking about coveting, having desires, and we're looking at some examples that just aren't good. All desires aren't bad, that's for sure.
Right.
And we just need to keep it in perspective. Jonathan, why don't we go to the phones first, and then we'll go back to the Count of Monte Cristo.
All right, we have Randall from Connecticut. Good morning, Randall.
Happy Sunday and Merry Christmas.
You too, sir.
Merry Christmas.
Luke 10:41. Martha, Martha, you are anxious and worried about many things. Now, when Jesus scolds Martha for cleaning the house instead of listening to him, did Martha really want a clean house, or did she want to be closer to Jesus? And what is Jesus there, really scolding her or asking her to really look in her heart about what she wants? And do we really want that ring or that book or that toy, or do we want to feel understood and loved by our loved one? Ephesians 6:18, with all prayer and supplication, pray at every opportunity in the Spirit. So we pray in the Spirit, we ask for not only what we want, but to understand why we want it. And that opens ourselves up to be healed of our desires by God. Psalm 130:5, I wait with longing for the Lord. My soul waits for his word. So while waiting, when we ask for an understanding of what we want, it makes us more open to our gift, to receive it, to actually receive it, but also bring us peace while we wait. Luke 10:42, there is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, and it will not be taken from her.
Randall, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Merry, merry, merry Christmas.
You too. Christmas.
And Randall put in perspective for us how to go about with our desires in the right way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because he spiritualized it, and he put things in perspective and said, you know, you've got to be looking at the bigger picture and not just fulfilling some crazy desire that you have. It's got to be something valuable, something worthwhile that you set your desires on. And I think that's a great lesson for us to look at in terms of understanding how we move forward here.
Through prayer. What a great focus.
I like how we also talked about, though we seem to be seeking things, what we're really looking for is fulfillment of self.
Right.
And being loved and understood and all of those things.
I don't know, though, but when I was a kid, I really wanted that major Matt Mason thing. And when I got it, I was happy. I don't know what to tell you. But that's the difference between a kid and an adult, and
exactly.
I think that's the point. Let's go back to we've talked about King David and Nathan coming to him. Let's go back to our story from The Count of Monte Cristo. Many years now have gone by. Edmund escapes from prison. You know, that now his fiancée thought that he was dead because that's what they told her. And he's come back, and now through a series of very dramatic circumstances and the revealing of truth, he's facing Fernand face-to-face now, facing his former friend, who's his betrayer. And they're at a point where they can either have it out or just let it go.
You let me fight him?
Didn't do any good, then, did it?
I beg you, no more!
I want no more of this. Just go. Call it mercy. Mercy for none.
So, Edmond decides. Now, he wanted revenge. He was after revenge. But when it came right down to it, he looks his friend, former friend, in the eye, and he says, I want no more of this. Just go. Call it mercy. Just go. Because it's gone too far. That's where the coveting brought them to a point where they had the choice, and they could either fight it out or they could just part ways. And so Edmond is saying, let's just part ways. Let's just be done with this. It's caused enough grief and damage and heartache for years and years and years. Let's just be done with it.
But either way, Fernand loses. He either loses his friendship or he loses because they were going to beat each other up. So, I mean, the coveting, you know, they could never be the friends that they were before. So he really, it just started this whole scheme of yuckiness.
Yeah, and you know, in the movie, it wasn't beating each other up. There were swords involved, okay?
Okay. So, killing each other.
Yeah, so
I have to go watch The Count of Monte Cristo.
So the point is, I want no more of this. He comes to a point, just let's put it behind us, and he's willing to step beyond it, even though he wanted revenge. And, you know, in some ways, you look at the story and you say, wow, he deserved to get revenge after what this guy did to him. So anyway, we're developing that story. There'll be one more soundbite in just a few more minutes. Let's go now back to, very quickly, 2 Samuel 11, 26 and 27, in terms of the story of King David again.
Now when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she mourned for her husband. When the time of mourning was over, David sent and brought her to his house, and she became his wife. Then she bore him a son, but the thing that David had done was evil in the sight of the Lord.
So the man is dead, she mourns, and then David takes Bathsheba to be his own wife, and she bears the child. And incidentally, the child dies very shortly after.
Yeah.
It was evil that was done.
But it's also, like you were talking about the sandwich of the Ten Commandments. No one knew. No one in the kingdom except for David would have had to have known the covetedness that went on in his heart because he covered it up from everybody but God.
That's true. And we'll see what happens with that later on because that's an interesting point. Let's go to 2 Samuel 12:10.
Now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife.
So that's Nathan's words to David saying part of what's going to happen to you is...
Here's his punishment.
You're going to live with blood on your hands for the rest of your days because you have done such evil in God's sight. And there are consequences
there are.
When we covet in an illicit sense. When we covet things that should not be ours and we act on it, it can only bring evil to us. Let's look at the other side of things, and then let's talk about some of the good things that we might desire.
Psalms 37, 3 through 6, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he will do it. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light and your judgment as the noonday.
So here's the other side of having desire. If you trust in the Lord, if you delight yourself in the Lord, he will give you the desires of your heart. And that's what Randall was saying, I think, in his call,
mm-hmm.
that we need to focus our desires toward godliness. And if you really are focused on godliness, then that illicit coveting isn't going to enter your life anymore.
Right.
Because you're too preoccupied with goodness rather than with badness. So it just puts things in a different perspective. Folks, if you have a thought, now would be the time. We're nearing the end here. 866-985-4255. Toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday morning from 6 to 8. That means we're on right now. Let us know what you think.
And our website is christianquestions.net.
Talking about desires. Jonathan, what do you want?
Well, when I thought that over and preparing for the subject, these are the things that came to mind. I want God's will to be done on earth as it is in heaven.
That sounds like the Lord's Prayer, doesn't it?
Yeah, I want God's kingdom for all. I want the Abrahamic promise to be fulfilled. I want peace on earth and goodwill towards men. And I want all things to be in harmony with God and Jesus. And that's my ultimate hope and desire.
And when you say those are the things that you want, is that a casual, yeah, I kind of like these things to happen?
No. That's with every fiber of my being, because I believe in God's word.
All right. And again, if we delight ourselves in the Lord, he will give us the desires of our heart. Vic, what do you want?
Ibid. He said it all. He really did. Exactly what I was thinking was thy will to be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's the ultimate.
And if we thoroughly bring into our lives the will of God, then this idea of coveting and going off the deep end just gets further and further from our minds, because it doesn't. It's a grand contradiction to where our life should be going.
Godliness and with contentment is great gain.
That's right. And contentment means you don't need to be desiring what somebody else has
right.
for yourself. Again, folks, if you have a thought, now would be the time. 866-985-4255. Toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 6 to 8. Means we're on right now. Give us a call. Let us know what you think about coveting and desire and putting it all in perspective.
And this is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick and Vicki.
You know, we talked about that story of the Count of Monte Cristo, and Edmond Dantès says to his former friend who betrayed him and sent him off to prison, just go. Call it mercy. Just go. So Fernand turns to leave, and then he comes back. Let's just play one more clip from this, because he just can't let go. This guy just can't let go, and he comes back one last time.
Edmond! Watch over your mother. Now I couldn't live in a world where you have everything and I have nothing.
And that sums it up. Fernand, this arrogant, rich guy who just desired everything that his friend had, who didn't have anything except his own integrity, he comes back. He does not accept the mercy given to him. And he says, you know, I couldn't live in a world where you have everything and I have nothing. Because remember, you said either way, Fernand loses.
Right, right.
And he couldn't accept losing, because in his mind, winning meant doing better than his
right.
friend. What a sad state of affairs.
Wow, that is sad. I've got to watch this movie. I've got to see this.
He sounds too sad. Now maybe I won't.
It actually has a very happy ending. But he's stuck. He's stuck in that covetous attitude that just brings him down and brings nothing but grief to his life and to those around him. And, you know, Vic, you'd said something about King David having the events with Bathsheba secret.
Right.
They were. Let's just look at Psalm 51. We're going to read a couple of selected verses. And this was a psalm that was put in place as David giving his own penitence. And he did it publicly. Let's just read some selected verses here.
Be gracious to me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the greatness of your compassion. Blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin.
All right. So he says, be gracious to me, O God, according to your loving kindness. Now, again, this is a psalm that David put out with the instructions that it should go to the temple and it should be sung before the people. And it's about his sins. So he, upon realizing how badly he sinned,
right,
made a public confession of his sins before all of the people.
Which shows his heart contrition.
But it took a lot to get there.
Right.
It was his testimony to the Lord.
And it was an important testimony to the Lord. Go ahead.
For I know my transgressions and my sin is ever before me. Against you, you only, I have sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are justified when you speak and blameless when you judge.
So he's saying, I have done evil in your sight. He's not hiding. He's not telling some kind of a parable here. He's saying, I, the King of Israel, have done evil in the sight of God. Next section, Vicki.
Wash me and I shall be whiter than snow. Make me to hear joy and gladness. Let the bones which you have broken rejoice. Hide your face from my sins and blot out all my iniquities. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me.
So he's saying, make me hear joy and gladness. Let the bones which you have broken rejoice. He's saying, I have fallen completely out of your grace. Bring it back to me so that I can again dwell in the goodness of your grace, not in the evil of my own heart, which caused so much grief and destruction. Folks, we're talking about how important it is to have our desires set on the right things and to avoid coveting in the wrong ways, to avoid desiring those things which belong to other people that are not rightfully ours. It's an important lesson for all of us all of the time. For Jonathan and Rick and Vicki and Christian Questions, we'll be back again next week. But until then, the lesson is real clear. It's coveting. What do you want? We'll be back again next week.